One of the things I often tell my children, actually, when they were growing up, when they were very young, I usually say this to them: it's not about you. It's not just about you.
You are listening to the WADT podcast. I'm Parkson, and my co-hosts for today are Hafiz, Kevin, and welcome back, Fanny. Now, change is taking place all the time. But in the last 50 years, the rate of change has been increasing exponentially. And at this rate, the future will be exciting and unpredictable. How then can parents prepare their children for it? How can parents raise future-ready kids starting today? And today we're going to talk about three areas: skills, character, and mindset. So let's begin with skills. Hafiz, what do you think are the skills that are essential for a child to be future ready from today on?
Well, gone are the days when the four skills that we need is just reading, listening, what, speaking, writing, something like
reading,
that.
Reading, writing,
right?
Arithmetic.
Arithmetic, four. Or three and four.
Talking, yeah. Right?
So today, I mean, I went, I was 5 years ago working with some schools. They were talking about STEM, you know. You know, the science, technology, what?
Engineering and maths.
Engineering and maths. Now they have A, STEAM.
Arts.
Attitudes. Yeah, arts. Arts, yeah. So, definitely, this is very, very, very much due to the realization that even if you are into science, technology, which is very much valued today, you need to have the human and intelligence, all right, or the social intelligence, not just the emotional intelligence as well, and not just the IQ, right, intellectual quotient and so on and so forth. So I think on that note, I think when I was in the university, engineering was such a popular subject that many people were queuing for university courses, engineering courses. But today, actually today with my children in the university, humanities are gaining more popularity, right? And even then, even in any faculty or any course, there's multidisciplinary approaches towards that course. For example, my daughter doing humanities, she has to do a lot of non-humanity stuff, all right? And for my son who's in engineering, in fact, he's in SUTD, it's very much like 30-40% humanities loaded, which is quite uncommon for an engineering faculty or engineering course. So I think this is something that the real world today has seen. And even more important, we see even in COVID, right? So much as technology has been dependent and people lack the social and human skills sometimes, and it doesn't really make the person achieve what they want.
Yeah, I think what you said is something we are all discovering, and that is, you know, more than IQ, the intelligence and the knowledge that we have, we need another set of skills, which are the social skills, emotional intelligence, empathy, and another skill is collaboration, which is greatly lacking. You know, I read a news article, I believe it was the Harvard Business Review a couple of years back, where, you know, this journalist was interviewing a few CEOs of big companies who hired a lot of fresh graduates from, you know, the American universities. And many of them, nearly all of them, made the same observation. And that is, we thought that the students will be very good at working as in teams, all right, which requires the skills of collaboration and perspective taking. But to their surprise, they discovered that they were very, very weak in it. I mean, the reason is because as early as junior high and high school, you know, these students are already doing a lot of group work, group projects, group studies and all that. So you would think that by the time they graduate from the U, they would have, you know, developed this skill of collaboration, of working in teams. And today companies, a lot of them work in teams, all right? And they discovered that, no, they did not have this skill. So collaboration is another skill that is needed. What do the rest think? Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, I can't agree more about this whole collaboration thing. I was listening to a podcast from Simon Sinek, and then he was saying that he was describing the selection criteria for the Navy SEALs, you know. So some of them, when they sign up for the to enroll and they're going through the testing, right? Some of them were actually very brilliant in their mind academically, but when they found out that when they required them to work together to clear an obstacle, those that were academically a bit more stronger, they had difficulty working together with the others because they are so used to just doing things on their own and getting the job done on their own. When it came to a team effort kind of task, they couldn't work together, and most of them were actually dropped out from the selection criteria. So I thought, yeah, so facilitation is very important. I mean, collaboration is very important. And I feel in a very fast changing society now, adaptability is also very important. You need to be able to adapt to constant changes, working online, working at home, with technology. So you see, the skill to be able to adapt is also important for future-ready kids, I think.
Fanny, you are heading a nonprofit organization, Daughters of Tomorrow, where one of the things you do is to empower women, to be employable, and you know, so that they will have economic mobility and things like that. So, in your observation or from your experience, what can you see are some of the very important skills, especially for the younger, you know, women, younger girls, that the type of skills that they need in order to be future ready?
Actually, future ready, I feel that, thanks for the question, but future ready is actually more a mindset thing, which I think we're going to discuss it a little later. But the idea of when we prepare the women, I think there are hard skills and soft skills, but the very underlying foundation, what we start off with, is actually building confidence and also, you know, helping people to believe that they have this potential in them. So again, it's dealing more with mindset. That's where we start before we imbue them with the other soft skills and the technicalities. I mean, what Kevin was mentioning earlier, there are behavioral competencies. So I do lead an organization and we do have HR check-in and our conversations. And it's usually not around the hard skills like, you know, IT or your logistics or project management skills. So it's not usually that, but we are talking about behavioral competencies, about adaptability, about managing stakeholders. So we actually look into more of that because those are, I suppose, the other stuff can be learned on the job. We can probably go for a WSQ course to learn to up our advanced, to become like more advanced in our IT usage. But certain things needs to be sharpened, like you said, Parkson, because individually you could be all, okay, so this is where the football analogy comes in. I don't know, at least when I was younger, England used to be in the World Cup, England used to be a team that is very much, you know, get eyeballs because a lot of star players there. But because they're not so much able to work very well together as a team, even that you got, you know, players that are so popular and so well-known in their own clubs, but once they come together, because they're not able to pull it together, then that becomes a challenge as well. So skills has different dimensions to it. And I think we are more emphasizing right now in the soft skills aspect, or we call it behavioral competencies. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, there's a difference between being a team of great players and a great team of players.
Yeah, and I think I echo what Fanny's saying also. I think what can help the kids is to help develop transferable skills, that regardless of which industry that they go to, that they can use that skill as well, like for something like leadership or even emotional, how you handle your emotions, for example. It's a skill that they need to develop and hone while they're young. And so no matter which industry or stage of life that they go to, it will help them progress.
Yeah, I think things like resilience, adaptability, mental flexibility. Now, to some extent, they are skills, but to some extent, they are characteristic traits, right? And also mindset. So we'll get into that. You know, a trend that is already taking place today, and I read about it quite a number of years back, is something called the slash career. I don't know if you have heard of it. You know, in our parents, for example, they have one career, right? Or he's an engineer, he's a teacher, he's an accountant, right? So practically their whole lives, they are basically doing that work. You know, one career, one vocation, one profession. But today, things are changing, you know. If you have only one skill, right? So for example, I'm an engineer, Hafiz also is an engineer, all right? But today, look, what are we doing? We're doing something that is not related to engineering. Okay, so that's what people are discovering. If you're banking on one skill and one profession, you are finished. You're gonna sink. Once a recession hits every 10 years, for example, you're gonna be drastically impacted. So it's important for you to have backups in that sense. So you know, they call it a slash career. So your full-time job may be engineering, all right? But on the side, you may have you're dabbling a little bit with biology or chemistry or web design or IT, you know, or even something else, or even sports, for example. Okay, so that when the tide of economy changes, you know, or even times change, you are able to adapt. You know, you always have a backup. So that's something called the slash career. And I've talked to my children about that. You know, I can't force them to do it, but I think that's something all kids need to bear in mind. All right, moving on to character. So Fanny, let's start with you. You know, so in terms of character or characteristics, what do you think are some essentials or even must-have for someone to be really ready for what the future holds for us?
One of the things I often tell my children, actually, when they were growing up, when they were very young, I usually say this to them. It's not about you. It's not just about you. And the world doesn't revolve around you. So, you know, I oftentimes will tell them, you know, we need to get to places on time. And, you know, because it is not just about you, there's a schedule of, you know, if let's say the bus takes off, you know, there's a lot of people on the bus. It's not, you know, just catering to your needs and your schedule and your preferences. So to me, that's one thing I start off. So that they know, hopefully they don't grow up to be very entitled or very inward looking. So yeah, that's my foundational baseline. There are other things that I usually want them to learn as well. What motivates me is that, you know how we talk about environmental concerns right now, right? We say, oh, don't litter, we only have one Mother Earth, take care of it and steward it, and don't leave your litter around, kind of thing, for the next generation. So actually, I frame this in my own mind as, you know, I shouldn't leave Mother Earth with spoiled children as well. Like, don't litter the earth with spoiled children, because spoiled children today will be spoiled adults tomorrow, and, you know, other people will have to deal with them. So I try to go on that premise and say, okay, I would like my children to build on the character. And I tell my eldest son is quite strong academically, so he does quite well in class. But so while I say, I encourage him and I say, yeah, that's great, I'm very proud of you, son, there's something else that I would also like you to work on that will make me probably as proud, if not prouder, of you. Like, you know, being with greater pride is that you work on your character, to understand that, you know, while it's great that you get top marks, what about going to help out another friend who might be struggling with his work? And I told him that, you know, I said, I think your teachers should grade you on that. How many friends have you helped out to improve their grades? So let them grade you on the impact that you make in school rather than just on your grades alone, you know. Because, hey, I tell him this because I think one time he told me he got number 3 in class, or I don't know, maybe he's basically just either 1, 2, 3, like either for subject or for class or whatever. And I told him, I said, it's great, but I think it's great, and you got to understand that you actually have a very good starting point. I told him it's as though you are running a on the track. There is nothing in the way in your track. You know, that lane that you are running in, everything is a clear path for you. I say you have friends running alongside you, other runners, when their track is all lined with obstacles. So it doesn't just, it's not a clear path for them. They either got to, I don't know, got to remove some obstacles in that path, or there's something like, you know, they might be running with a limp or something like that. So I said, look out for those people. And I think this is more valuable to me than, you know, just doing very well in your academic qualifications. And he's very scared of me because sometimes I get to dialogue with, due to my work, I get to dialogue with some ministries, one of them being the MOE la. And I say, hey, you know what? I'm going to give suggestions. Then he's always like, oh, yeah, can you don't meet so many, you know, the MOE and give all these suggestions and you make my life busier. Yeah.
Yeah, I think nowadays young people, you know, have this thing FOMO, FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. So they always want to be ahead of everyone else. So let me check with your husband, Fanny. Kevin, do you agree with everything Fanny said?
Yes.
Or you have something else to add to it?
Yes, all of the above. In fact, I was thinking the world doesn't revolve around you kind of comment. Is that a mindset or is that a character? But I was going to say that's important. That's something that I just told our kids yesterday after I picked them. You know, like the world doesn't revolve around you. You know, you need to bear in mind that there are other people at stake. But I was also thinking about character-wise. I think in this whole day and age of all these scams and everything, I think being honest and integrity is a very important trait to have. It's very basic, but it's very important to be who you are with and without people, like, you know. So integrity is very important. When you say something, people will know that whatever you say is what you say, like, you know. Yeah. So I think maintaining that and building that in our child is very important.
So I just want to hop in on character building. Already so much have been discussed, not only at home but in school. And is it the parents' role? Is it the school's role? I think it's both, right? And I think Fanny didn't mention about MOE. You know, I started wanting to be a teacher. I at the end of the day, to cut the story short, I believe that if education system is not flexible, it's not able to address the concerns of the day of the kids, then it's failed. So in Singapore, we very, very much, of course, stress a lot on exams and, you know, results, which is nothing wrong with it. However, I also have a friend teacher, he teach physical education, PE, and he feels that that particular subject is not fully optimized, because it's during those times when you are playing sports, you are in a state of stress, being tested to work in a team, or tested in strength, tested in being uncomfortable. These are character modes. These are ways in which you can build character. But there's no measurement. It's not a formal subject. You're examinable. I think that's where we are lost. Because if you say that everything must be examinable, then we will never be able to examine or test character. Until today, all right, I think there's no one system that can say that, you know, you are a good person, all right, character wise, and you achieve 100%, and you are 75%, you're 50%. People have different values, all right, and how do you measure that value? So until we change, all right, the way we you know, the framework of how we think of how education should be or how character should be part of our life, we will never get that formula right. So again, as parents, we have to take it into our responsibility first, okay, to have that many of those issues solved, instead of just waiting for the structure and MOE, you know, to solve it for us.
Well, I'm glad you moved into this area of how to develop character, and you're right. I mean, you can teach all the theory about character, right? You know, what's honesty, what's humility, and then in the test, you ask them to define humility, you know, and then so the child writes whatever he writes. And then the next question could be, give me an example of humility. And then he writes, me. Oh, you failed. Yeah. So character is, well, you can teach it during, I call it peace time. But the test is when the rubber hits the road, right? When you are, you know, cornered, when you are kind of at your wit's end, you know, and when people are resisting you and objecting to you, and when people are mocking you and people are leaving you and things like that. Yeah. So what comes forth from you is the true indication of your character. And character is very, again, you know, often mistaken as personality, right? So a lot of people are drawn to people with certain personality. They call it charisma, you know, but that's not character. Character is something you can only see over time. And because character is something that, you know, it's consistent, you know, and personality, you can switch it on and switch it off, all right? So
that's something that Penny and I try to do is always remind our kids to look out for others, to be mindful of others. And so talk about testing, right? I actually tested my kids, you know. There was one time I actually went out to get lunch and I made a turn and it was quite a narrow path. And there was an oncoming postman on his scooter, and he saw me, but he swerved away, but his motorbike fell, you know. Yeah. So I described this to the kids, like, oh, the motorbike fell and kind of thing. Yeah. And the truth was I stopped my car and I went to help the man, lah, okay, and I helped him out, make sure he's okay and stuff like that. Yeah, but what I told the kids was, no, this uncle, postman, he came, and his motorbike fell, and then the bike was pinning him down. So I saw him, then he wasn't hurt, I drove away. That's why I think this story to the kids. So my kids, they were in shock. They were like, how could you do that? I saw my youngest one, he was so angry. I was like, Papa, how can you go away? No, they were actually very angry. I said, oh, okay. No, I tell you what I actually did. I helped them. They said, oh, okay. So it's very good. Like, I'm very glad that they were angry at me for driving away, you know? So I was like, oh, I'm very glad that you guys have a conscience and that you know of the right thing to do, so to speak, like, in this situation. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So find different ways of situational, you know, raising some painting some scenarios and say what do you think is the right thing to do. But saying it is quite different from actually doing it when you're required to do it. Okay, mindset. Well, let me start with Fanny again, since Fanny said, you know, you're kind of thinking more in terms of mindset. So what mindset do you think is important for the future that parents can now start to kind of inculcate into their children?
It's like what you said earlier, Parkson, that nowadays professions are no longer like, you know, not say no longer, but most of the time it's not so common now to find, like, you start off with this track and you always do it for the rest of your life. And I think in the last 2-3 years, not well, 2 years plus now, you know, the with the pandemic, it's almost like there's a K shape in terms of the industries. Sectors and companies that did well in certain sectors, they all went up. There's a certain group of them. Then the other drawing of that K is that some sectors actually went down as well. And it's surprising because, you know, some actually did very well, but, you know, just because of the pandemic, then it all just went downhill from there. And so you realize that it's because of and of course now with the war situation and, you know, the logistics company are all challenged as well. So who knows what will be still here for 5 years or 10 years or 20 years later. I've been in quite a few, a few conversations on what is the future ready workforce. In fact, Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy also have a futures ready. I don't know, is it a course or a seminar? But, you know, I was also invited for that type of session. And then they asked me, like, oh, so what is the future occupation? To be honest, these are questions that will, like, I find it hard to even answer, like, 1 year, 2 years later, you know. So I think to be future ready is really to have that mindset, to be willing to embrace, willing to unlearn and relearn and continuously learn. And I think when we keep an agile mindset like that, then we are future ready. And I mean, how do you teach that to children? To be honest, right now, I don't think I'm placing a lot of emphasis on this. I can see some of my kids who are more naturally talented, who are more able to. So I shared about my eldest boy who's academically strong, but perhaps I'm not so sure whether he'll be strong in being future ready because he's quite systems, you know, within the system. He's a typical, like, wow, very, maybe Singaporeans' parents' dream child type of thing, like, you know, he's really within the system. But whereas my daughter, I feel, has a more, has that personality to shift as needed. And so you ask me, I think she's got a more future-ready mindset, although academically she's struggling. Yeah, so that's where I see what future-ready means.
I mean, if that microcosm of your family, like Fanny, right, having different type of children who have different inclination, right, and so on. So it's the same as mine and many. So you put it in the whole context of the country, right? If we ignore, right, those not exam oriented students or academic oriented students, right, we really lose their contribution, be it to the economy, be it to the society. So again, I think we have to change in terms of the framework how we do things. So unless we, because this thing about change is constant, and if you remember the acronym VUCA, right, this was like after Cold War in the 80s, you know, where the Navy SEALs came with this framework, right? VUCA means volatility, uncertainty, complexity, ambiguity. I mean, these are things that is common then. It is more apparent now, right? I mean, even COVID make it worse or make it apparent, okay? And I try to reverse it. So if things are so volatile, what must you have? You must have a vision. You must have be able to look forward and look in the long term, all right? Don't just look today what's physically in front of you. You must have imagination, creativity, blah, 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 all right? And then how do you overcome uncertainty? Then you must have understanding of what's happening around you. Okay, I mean, real understanding, not just in your own area of work, but in other areas as well. That means today, people, industry companies appreciate people who are more multidisciplinary. I mean, they are more open to learning, open to going beyond their comfort zone. Okay, so complexity, for example, you have clarity over what you want. So one of the mindset, important about mindset is being clear of yourself. I mean, having clarity of yourself, self-awareness. If you don't have that self-awareness, and how do you teach children self-awareness? I need to talk to them as a person. Don't talk to them as, you know, as a person you want him to be or want her to be. Everyone is unique, and you need to make them really look deep into themselves. And lastly, just to finish, about ambiguity, you mentioned also just now, is to be agile. You know, talking about agility, right? So these are all, I think, bit mindset, bit skills, or even to a certain extent, a character that you must have. And looking into mindset change, I think we also mentioned in a podcast before about growth mindset. And someone mentioned just now about the ability to handle change, welcoming new experience, taking risks, okay, and facing challenges. So if someone who grew up, everything is on their silver platter, compared to a person who has to go through the hard challenges of going through, working hard, you know, going through difficulty, learning from mistakes, I think the results are going to be different.
Are you concerned that, you know, because of the rise of artificial intelligence, that, you know, our future generations will find it harder and harder to get jobs? Kevin, let's start with you.
So can you rephrase that again, the question? Repeat the question.
Are you concerned that, you know, because of AI, artificial intelligence, that in the future of, you know, our children or children's children will find it more and more difficult to find jobs? And how do we prepare them for this?
Some of my children are really worried that robots are taking over the world. It did not have to be that way, lah. You know, at the end of the day, we can work in tandem and together with the AI. It really depends on the industry and what needs to be done, lah. I'm not worried in that sense, yeah, because at least for what we are trying to do, we are trying to raise our children that contribute to society. So if the AI has taken over certain roles, then they just find something else that they can contribute to society, lah, because society definitely needs help, lah. So AI or not, they will still be relevant, lah, to the people, to society. So I'm not worried.
Yeah, but because change is happening so quickly, right? You know, while you're in school, in university, studying a particular course, thinking that, oh, there's a market out there. But by the time you graduate, robots are taking over, AI is taking over. So you're kind of, oops. Fanny, what do you think? How do we prepare? How do parents prepare kids for these kind of future?
So that's where I think the emphasis I mean, for myself, lah, I look into the behavioral competencies within my organization, but also in my family as well, that we talk about. There are certain things that AI will not take over. And that's usually to do with things that have human touch. And no doubt, actually, AI is, I don't know, I've seen some of the, I mean, I've not seen it, I've read about it, how AI can reply emails. It's like chatbots, right? So they can take over like call centers and all of that. And it's definitely able to do some things better than we can. That's the reality.
More efficiently, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. More efficiently. And as technology, and when you want to talk about skill as well, this is definitely like one of the things that machineries can do. I say better, but I just mean that, you know, you can do it more, lah, more and faster, like you said, Parkson, efficiently. So, but the things that AI cannot duplicate is the human emotion and connection, which I think it still requires us to be around. So we've got to learn to shape shift in that sense, lah. That's what I said about agility, and I think I emphasize it again. And I mean, the reason why my children are talking afraid, and they're not afraid, lah. They've just been watching cartoons where the robots take over the world. So they've been watching a couple of cartoons like that. but yeah, that's the reality. I think we've got to come to terms with it, and we've just got to work on what we do best. So it's almost like a strength-based exercise. What do humans have? And we work on those traits instead.
Mm. Hafiz, you're a coach. What do you think that AI will ever take over coaching? Or for that matter, counseling?
Why do you think I'm into coaching? Because no way. Because we don't understand coaching about, it's what Fanny mentioned, some of the skills. Or some of the profession, it really needs human touch. And coaching example is an example where you need really a human touch. All right. You talk about self-awareness. How do you have robots to increase self-awareness in your coachee? All right. I mean, it's also communication. I mean, there are certain employability skills, right? I mean, there are how many? 4, 5, 7, 10, doesn't matter. So among it, for example, I think communication, teamwork, leadership, self-management, initiative, organization. If you look at all this, can machines do all this? Yeah, machine can do all this. But to a certain extent, all right? And I think we are in the age where the difference can be made, all right? By that, the so-called performance difference can be made by the split human touch, okay? And I think not talking about just the retail and so-called sector, but all sectors to me need human touch today. At workplace, dealing with your clients, dealing with your customers, I mean, even if you are a factory, okay, a factory that runs with robots, but you still need human. Because I've been in a factory before, we've done automation projects before, then there are cases where even seemingly simple tasks, the robot cannot do because that person has 30 years of experience doing it. And sometimes it's not just the mathematical, it's just hunch. It's just about the experience that makes the difference. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, you know, I can imagine that there will be people who would prefer to talk to a machine, you know, if they have any kind of problems. Just like today, people are just Googling, right? If they maybe feel that they have depression or any kind of medical condition, right? They will first Google and see, you know, first try to diagnose, self-diagnose, and then after that, self-medicate or self-treat. In the area of emotions, for example, maybe some people might feel more comfortable talking to a machine or at least Googling the answer, because talking to another human being, they are afraid of being judged, right? Because human beings can show empathy, but, you know, at the same time, human beings can judge others, you know, and that's some people are just so afraid of that and they don't want to even take the risk, right? Yeah. So, you know, I hope that you guys will read the book, The 100-Year Life. I know I've talked about this many, many times. It's very insightful, okay? So one of the things that this book talks about is that in the future, life will be very different from ours or even especially our fathers or parents or grandparents. Our parents and grandparents, their lives are basically divided into three phases. Number one, education. Of course, we don't talk about childhood. Education, employment, and then retirement, right? So they study, get a job, and then stay with that job or even that same company for the rest of their lives, of their working lives, and then they retire. What we are seeing in our lives today, even right now, is happening already, is that, you know, you don't stay in one company, you probably don't even stay in one profession for all your lives. Many people, you know, have an engineering degree and worked in engineering for a number of years, and then they change to something else. You know, they start their own company, selling clothes, selling spectacles, whatever. Okay. That is life, what life will be in the future. And more so because your children, okay, I want to speak about your children, those born, you know, Generation X, for example, or Generation Y. More likely than not, they will be able to live longer. And many of them will live beyond 100 years old. Okay. It's already happening in Japan, where, you know, it used to be a very rare thing for anyone to live up to 100 years old. And so Japan, the nation, would give these people, they call them the centenarians, you know, a special reward. Okay. But a number of years back, they actually scrapped it. Because too many Japanese are living to 100 and beyond, you know, and they say we can't afford to give every one of them a reward, okay? So that is how we are progressing as a society and as a global, you know, community. So life is going to change and we need to prepare our children for it. So it's no longer study and then immediately after you graduate, get a job, stick with that job, start a family and all that. The pattern of their lives is going to be very different. There's going to be periods of exploration. So that's something we need to, you know, in that sense, prepare our children for or even encourage exploration. And I do see that in, for example, American kids. Maybe it's also happening among Singaporean kids, where after they graduate, you know, they take a leap or a gap year, you know, whether they go on a mission trip, they go join World Vision, Habitat for Humanity, one of these, you know, international nonprofits, and they go and serve people or do something different or just travel. And then in the midst of traveling, in the midst of doing these things, they begin to understand themselves more, and then they decide, okay, what am I going to do next? You know, and 20, 30 years later, they're going to be asking that question again, who am I? And what do I really want to do, okay, after 20 years of, let's say, working in some kind of a job. So these are things I find very interesting. And if this book is really predicting the future, which already has begun accurately, then I think these are lessons we can learn and begin to impart to our kids. Okay, no, one final thing. Yeah, wait, go ahead.
When you talk about mindset, right, I thought one mindset that we should try to look out for in our kids that they shouldn't have, right, is the mindset that if it doesn't affect me, it's okay. Mm. That kind of mindset, you know, where people can do whatever they want, as long as it don't affect me, they can do whatever they want. I think that's a mindset that we should look out for, that and correct that kind of mindset, because it's a very selfish way of thinking, and it's not future ready lah. It's very self-centered. And it's not helpful in society building, so to speak. And the flip side of it, or the reverse of that, right, is that in thinking that this is what Annie also tells our kids, right? It's not about our rights, but our responsibilities. Is there something that we can do or should do? It's a mindset that we should shift. That is only not only about fighting about my rights or talking about my rights, but is it my responsibility to help? Is it my responsibility to do something about it? Yeah. So it's a way of looking and raising our kids to be able to look out away from not to talk only just looking out for their own self, but to look out for others. And I think in particular, another mindset that I feel that is important for Singaporean kids is that it's okay to fail. It's okay to fail, and encouraging to fail forward, so to speak. So make use of the failure, learn from your mistakes, and then get up and go again. Because I think Singaporeans, because they are so academically driven, they are so afraid to fail, that they are so risk averse, that it kind of like stops them from doing things, or stops them from doing things, or
from trying.
Exploring things, or trying things, you know, because they're so afraid to fail. But a future-ready kid will be encouraged to fail forward, and in some sense be teachable lah. You know, when you do something, learn, make a mistake, it's okay. Get up and go again, kind of thing. I think it's a very important message to our Singaporean kids, at least, to be that it's okay to fail and to fail forward. Yeah, just some thoughts on mindset lah. Thanks.
Wonderful. Yep. One last point. When you were young, all of you, did anyone ask you, let's say your parents ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? Have you asked your children that question also?
Yeah, we tend to do that. I did. Although it's sometimes not in myself. I mean, we send them to certain courses and then they will ask. But usually it will end up differently. I mean, I myself end up differently, even against my parents' wishes to be a teacher, to be a journalist. You know, they went all the way, you know, to get scholarships. But, you know, I become, you know, what I am today. And I think at the end of the day is the question should be, what will make you happy when you grow up? I think we have to turn this question around. And even today, you mentioned about the gig economy, the slash jobs, and so on and so forth. The question is no longer relevant. All right. And in fact, it was never relevant, only that it becomes a convention that all of us as parents ask, or teachers ask, you know, that society asks. And most of the time, do we really think the person who really get what he ambitioned for when he was young, happy? Not necessarily.
That's an interesting question. We had a conversation about this some time back when Fanny actually pointed out to me, don't ask such questions to children. Partly because one, as kids, they won't know what they want to do when their age, you know, 5, 6 years old, how do you know what they want to do, right? They don't know their skills, their strengths, or whatever. And I mean, like what Habis also mentioned, number two, that job might not even be around. Like what Mark also said, like AI, we have already replaced it. So that, I want to be this next time. But next time, no need already, because computer has replaced that job already, kind of thing, you know? Yeah. So I think another question that we can ask the child is, what kind of person you want to be? So we go back to the character, we go back to the person that they are, because who they are, whatever they do, will translate to that. Yeah, so it's important on what kind of person you want to be. I want to be a generous person. I want to be a kind person. Then work at that. Then no matter which industry or which vocation that you do, it's going to make an impact because you are that kind of person. No one will say, I want to be evil. I want to be a murderer. I want to be selfish. No one does that. But we want to ask that kid to be like that. So they aspire to be the kind of person that can be contributing to society. Yeah, so I think one question that I've learned to start to ask young kids is, what kind of person you like to be when you grow up?
Yeah, and I think how we ask the questions will matter as well. To be honest, I feel that sometimes when we ask, like, what is your ambition? What do you want to be when you grow up? Like, what job you want to take on? Sometimes it's due to people tying their identity to their occupation. So it's as though, like, you know, oh, I'm Fanny the lawyer, I'm Fanny the doctor kind of thing. And sometimes it gives parents pride when they share that, like, oh, my daughter is so-and-so and my daughter is, yeah. So it's an interesting trend. That I find that has somehow got passed down as well. And personally, maybe because I never really knew what to put down as my ambition. So maybe that's why, like, as a child growing up, I don't know lah, huh? That it's always usually what the textbook got, then I would just put down something along those lines. But I never really knew what is it that I want to be. And so maybe that's why this question never really resonated with me. And that's why I feel like it's quite a big pressure to ask. Even asking things like, who is your best friend? What's your favorite color? You know, you assume that the person has a best friend, or you assume that he must have a favorite color, you know, that kind of thing. Like, we are sometimes sealing things for the kids even before they are thinking about it or ready for it, kind of thing. Or maybe it's not even necessary. But of course, those are very trivial matters. It's okay. It's okay if you have a favorite color. It's okay if you have a best friend. But it's just very, as an example of how we sometimes imagine certain things and then we sort of indirectly plant it in the kids as well. So it's good to give a bit more free play lah, so that people are able to discover. You are holding the space. So as parents, I think we hold the space for children to discover who they are. Like Hafiz said earlier, yeah, discovering who you are actually is a very important part in life. Because I think only now in my last few years that I'm really discovering who I am. And I've lived 30 over years. I think we can probably start the process sooner than that.
yeah. I remember one of my son, we had this, went through a course, you know, enrichment course together as father and son, and we did this exercise and what they want to be. You know what my son say? I want to be a legend. I mean, at that point in time, what, Superman or Batman? You know, Avengers? No, but I think that's our initial reaction, right? But what should be the question is simple. Why you want to be that? We seldom, you know, ask further, you know, why and how and when, you know. So I think don't kill your children's dreams, you know, if they give such answers.
That's right. I think one of the things we need to remind our children, life is very dynamic. Life is very fluid. To your point, Fanny, about favorite color, right? You know, yes, at this moment, it's a snapshot of you. Your favorite color may be orange, you know? So when parents, you know, say, oh, my kid's favorite color is orange, then they'll buy everything orange and then they get tired of the color orange and they want to change. But in time, they'll change, you know? Orange may be a bit too strong or orange may not be in trend, you know? So they want to change. So life is fluid. Life is dynamic. So change is a constant, and we also change, and we should change, and we should be changing for the better. We should be maturing. And somebody said this, you know, and I totally agree with it, and I always, you know, talk about it. So the question, what do you want to be when you grow up, seems to be kind of outdated already, and seems to be maybe even counterproductive, because it locks people into a certain pathway for their lives. I guess in the past, it was useful, but in the future, it seems to be counterproductive. So what's a better question? And I think I totally agree with Kevin. And he says, what kind of person do you want to be? Yes, I think that's so important, you know, for a child or even for us adults to ask ourselves, what kind of person do I want to be? Because we are still growing, right? We have not attained it yet. Another question somebody suggested was, instead of asking what do you want to be when you grow up, what kind of problem do you want to solve? And I think this aligns with what both Fanny and Kevin, you know, is trying to tell their kids, all right? It's not just about you. You exist not just for your own pleasure. You exist not to gratify your own desires, all right? You exist not just to be famous and rich and all that, all right? To enrich yourself. Even when you have been enriched, think about others, how you can now use what you have, your position, your power, your wealth, your knowledge, your skills, to help others. So what problem do you want to solve? And I can tell you, in the world today, we have lots of problems. And for any problem, take poverty, for example, it requires teamwork of people with diverse skills, knowledge, talents, you know, passions and all that. So there's always room for somebody. There's something for somebody to do. And, you know, because that problem, poverty, you know how long we've been trying to eradicate poverty in the world? Have we succeeded? No, it was always a new generation of poor people being born. Okay, yeah, so it's something that is bigger than you. It's something that will probably outlive you, and so but it's definitely something worth giving your life to. So think about this. So today we've talked about this hot potato, and I think just like the previous episode, you know, the more we talk, the hotter we get about it. So we better stop before it gets on fire.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so thank you very much for your inputs, for your open sharing, and till the next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.